Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Rylan. On today's show, we're going to be heading to New York for the latest on and off Broadway productions that have piqued the interest of our theatre critic Matt Wolfe. And then later on in the program, we'll be back on this side of the pond to hear all about Dominic Maxwell's comedy highlights from this year's Edinburgh Fringe Festival. First, let's dial up New York, where Matt Wolfe is waiting at our bureau there. Matt, welcome to the show as ever. How is New York treating you?
New York's great. It's blissfully hot, not too humid today, so it's lovely.
Fantastic. That's a little bit different to what we're experiencing on this side over in London. Very, very warm indeed. Now, I referenced the on and off Broadway nature of our discussion today. Tell me a little bit about the differences. I mean, obviously, apart from geography, you can either be on Broadway or off it, but there's a difference in the sort of productions that play, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, well, one thing, off-Broadway shows tend to be cheaper to attend. They're in the double-digit prices, not the triple-digit. And also, I think the usual assumption is that off-Broadway is maybe edgier, a bit more adventurous, a bit bolder, not quite so dependent on stars. And that's true of what's on at the moment. I mean, for instance, there's a very interesting adaptation of Jane Austen's novel Sense and Sensibility, which is being done by a really funky company called Bedlam. And it's just a bunch of really good, vibrant, young American theater actors reinvigorating a classic British novel, and they do it beautifully.
Not always a very easy thing to do. So let's talk a little bit then about Oslo. What exactly is this one all about?
Well, this is a really interesting event, Ben, because it's an American play that feels like it could be happening in London. And by that, I mean it's got a big cast. It's in three acts. It's about 3 hours. It has two intervals. And it's on a meaty historical topic, which in this case is the 1993 Oslo Accord between the Israelis and the Palestinian Liberation Organization, something that, you know, we may know about from history and that, of course, fed various treaties that followed. But obviously, as we know, peace in the Middle East is still a hard-won goal. And the play is really ambitious because our guide into these historical figures who made these precipitous events happen is this kind of extraordinary Norwegian couple, Taya and Mona, who believe in diplomacy as something that happens away from Washington, away from major, major centers. And they also believe that just by maybe being nice to people and bringing them together and giving them food, you can broker a peace accord that you can't do in the kind of corridors of power. So it's a kind of backroom historical drama about momentous events, you know, 20 odd years ago that are still important now. And it's beautifully done. It's in a smallish theater at the Lincoln Center complex called the Mitzi Newhouse, and it's closing in a week or so, but it's done so well that next spring it's being promoted to a Broadway theater. And I think it's going to be a front runner next year for the Tony Award for Best Play.
Sounds quite fascinating indeed, actually, Matt. So that is Oslo. As you say, it is showing at the Newhouse until the end of the week, but he's headed to the Beaumont, and tickets are available to pre-order for that. That's showing next March. Matt, let's move on now to Fun Home, which is, I understand it's on Broadway this time. It's an adaptation of the graphic memoir by Alison Bechdel, who is a writer known for her work on gender roles and bias. This chronicles Bechdel's childhood in Pennsylvania and her complicated relationship with her father. Matt, this is a musical and it's won 5 Tony Awards and even a Grammy. That's quite impressive.
Yeah, this is a really superlative show. I saw it off Broadway when it first opened a couple of seasons ago. And then, as you mentioned, it was promoted to Broadway in the spring of 2015, kind of against the odds. I mean, it doesn't have big stars in it. It's on a potentially risky topic. I mean, it's about being the gay daughter of a closeted gay father, and you wouldn't necessarily think that that's a recipe for Broadway success. In fact, it's run on Broadway 18 months. It recouped, in other words, it paid back. And when I saw it at a Wednesday matinee last week, it was a full house. The audience was absolutely rapt, and it got one of those heartfelt standing ovations that are very moving, really, because it shows an audience connected to an event, not just, you know, because Hugh Jackman is on stage or whatever. This isn't about the stars. This is about the subject matter and the beauty with which it's told. It's told straight through. There's no interval. and it's got a kind of triptych approach to the central character of this daughter, who we see in her 40s, and then when she's sort of coming out as a younger gay woman, and then as a young girl. And so you get this kind of triple-pronged approach to her life and her emerging sexuality, set against her own father's conflicted sexuality, a father who had a lot more trouble dealing with his inner world than his own daughter. So that's the contrast, the fraught father and the much more self-accepting daughter.
I know that a lot of people listening will be aware of the name Bechdel because of its connotations with the Bechdel test, which is often used for determining gender bias in films.
Mm.
She's actually come forward and decried the use of that test subsequently, saying that it was never intended to be used so rigorously. She's obviously a bit of a character, and that's, well, probably something that you'd want to see coming through in the depiction on stage. Do you really get a sense of her character being up there with you?
You do. I mean, I obviously don't know her personally, and I have no idea to what extent these three remarkable actresses, one of whom is a young girl, Gabriella Pizzolatto, who I don't know, but she's certainly not a teenager yet, all the way through to Beth Malone, who plays the sort of grown adult Allison. But it's not in any way sentimentalized, but you do get a sense of a strong-willed woman who, you know, partly for generational reasons and partly just due to an emotional maturity, can confront a world entirely unavailable to her father. I must give a shout out, by the way, to a wonderful Broadway regular named Judy Kuhn, who was nominated for a Tony, sadly didn't win, but she's still in the production. She plays Allison's mother, the wife of this conflicted, tortured guy, and she is absolutely stunning. And it's one of these essentially reactive parts where a lot of it is her listening and responding and on the back foot, not the front foot, but it is about as beautiful a performance as there is in New York at the moment.
That's Fun Home, which is on at the Circle in the Square Theatre until September the 10th. Now, this October, it will begin touring around the US, hopefully with dates overseas too. We'll have to wait and see. And now our third play today, Matt, is a rather quiet affair. It's called Small Mouth Sounds. Here we meet six people escaping the city on a silent retreat. Matt, this sounds like an interesting concept for some storytelling. Tell us exactly what happens in Small Mouth Sounds.
Yeah, it's by a writer named Bess Wohl, W-O-H-L, and it's a play in which a lot of it is not scripted. In other words, events happen, people interact, but they don't speak. The idea is that they're on a kind of retreat to discover their inner selves and all of that, and one of the things that goes with it is silence. So you have these six people brought together, their allocated roommates and whatnot. They come with varying amounts of baggage, domestic relationships in crisis, grieving for loved ones or lost parents or what have you. There's an unseen kind of leader or teacher who, you know, coos instructions at them over the tannoy. But essentially, it's about how these six people interact during the course of this retreat. I like this quite a bit, but some of it is a little bit exaggerated for effect. I felt that maybe they could tone it down a little bit and not make it look quite so, you know, now we're going to be very on as this person interacts with the next person in order to get a gag from the audience. It's a little bit at the moment being played for laughs, as opposed to what the novelist George Eliot called the noise on the other side of silence, which I think is what the playwright wants to get at. How much is revealed about people when they're quiet, not when they're noisy? And right now they're playing it so much for audience laughs that in fact it isn't that quiet because it's being drowned out by the audience chuckling.
Well, Matt Wolf, thank you very much for talking us through some of your New York theatre highlights. Small Mouth Sounds is on at the Signature Centre until the 25th of September. And to end today's show, we're going to dial up Edinburgh. August is, of course, a very big month for the Scottish city when thousands of comedians, actors and keen audience members head north for one of the world's largest comedy and theatre events, the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. One such person is the lucky Dominic Maxwell, theatre critic for The Times here in London. He spoke to Holly Fisher earlier about some of his comedy highlights.
The thing about Edinburgh I always find is, doing comedy up here, most comedy is good rather than great. And then sometimes you come across stuff, maybe even clumps of stuff that is great. You can have days where you just see a bunch of stuff that makes you go, maybe it's me, maybe I've lost my capacity for joy. Or you can have days like I had yesterday where you think, oh yeah, this is the stuff. So it's quite hard to generalise.
Do you find that once you've seen 10 comedy shows, you struggle to find anything funny after a while?
I think what happens is your tolerance for the okay recedes. I think the good stuff still makes it through. But I think when you're sitting in a show and you know about 5 minutes in it's not really going to do it for you, then I think you have to sort of protect a little bit of your soul and retreat maybe slightly into yourself.
Dominic Maxwell always taking the back row. So let's talk about some of the great stuff then. What's been some of your highlights this year?
I think probably the best single one off the top of my head is Bridget Christie. She's done lots of good shows here before. She had a breakthrough about 3 years ago doing a show about feminism. She was going to do a show about mortality, and then Brexit happened. And of course, lots of comics have got Brexit material in. I don't think any other comic completely junked their set and then completely rewrote it in the weeks between the end of June and the beginning of August. And she's taken the same sort of despairing, overplayed rage that she used on with feminism, done it to Brexit, and actually has come up with something that I haven't seen before, something that what it does is it nails the sort of despair and the how did that happen and the what nextness in a kind of emotional way. It's absolutely wonderful.
And you talk about, you know, rewriting your whole set from the end of June. How long in advance are these comics planning these sets?
You know, in theory, Edinburgh is a place you come to try stuff out. Actually, it's the big time of the year. It's exams for clowns, as Andrew Maxwell said. It's bringing your cow to market. So a lot of them start trying out shows as early as January or even December. That's not at all uncommon. So to go to the extent of completely scrapping something at the end of June is quite bold. Nish Kumar, who's also doing an excellent show, and he was doing a comedy show on the night after Brexit, and he's a British Asian comedian, and he was told to go home by one heckle, and that prompted about 20 minutes of material, as you might imagine, in his show. On the other side, there is a lot of comedians. I don't want to exaggerate, but I think it's literally half of the comedians I've seen who address mental health issues, who have problems with depression. And that's prompted a couple of amazing shows. Richard Gadd, sort of an experimental, somewhere between performance art, theatre and comedy, he's done an extraordinary show about his own mental health issues over the last few years.
I guess that's been quite a hot topic in the last couple of years in the media as well, lots of people talking about it. When you've got all these shows talking about all these similar topics, you know, you must be constantly comparing them to each other. It must be actually make it quite difficult for a comedian to really shine through when they're all sort of making jokes about the same thing.
I think it's one of those things, if they're true to themselves, if they're doing it in their own way, if they're good enough, I think there is room for, you know, all sorts of people to look at these issues, and they will come up with something very different. Someone like the Australian comedian Felicity Ward, say, will do depression very differently from country mate Sarah Kendall, or there's the British sketch comic Colin Holt, who's got a bit of a breakthrough show this year, and he's using depression sort of as a kind of, he's using a depression group as a setting for a character comedy show, which runs the risk of being glib and making light of depression, but actually pulls it off.
We're approaching the end of the festival now, but there's still a few more days to go. What would you encourage people to go and see in the coming week?
Like I say, Bridget Christie, Nish Kumar, Richard Gadd, who's on at the Free Fringe late at night, Sarah Kendall. Not connected sort of thematically to any of those. I think Spencer Jones, he's a prop comic. He's come through in the last couple of years. If you want pretty much guaranteed fun and strangeness, he's doing two shows. Last year's show was on in the afternoons. That's fantastic. And there's a character comic called Kieran Hodgson, who's doing a show about his own experience trying to write a symphony. That's another Free Fringe show. That's terrific as well. And all of these will be coming to London eventually, but do catch them here if you can.
That was Dominic Maxwell, theatre critic for The Times here in London, talking us down the line from Edinburgh's Fringe Festival, which is on until Monday, the 29th of August. And that indeed brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks to my guest all the way over in New York, Matt Wolfe. You have been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Rylan. My producer was Holly Fisher. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow for our weekly book review. But for now, goodbye from me, and thanks for listening.